Welcome to Next Us 818 Podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African American community. I'm your host, Dr. JC. This episode of Next Us 818 Podcast features the Montford Point Marines. After 144 years of exclusion due to segregation, approximately 20,000 African American men were admitted to the Marine Corps. For their valiant service to our nation, these Marines were awarded the Congressional Gold Medal in November of 2011. If you're tuning into the podcast for the very first time, I encourage you to check out episode 27 from October the 4th, 2023, to learn more about the background of the Montford Point Marines. I am pleased to welcome to episode 36 the descendants of Gunnery Sergeant Clarence Augustus Roller, who served in the Montford Point Marines. My guests tonight are Lance Roller and Lance Roller Jr., grandson and great-grandson of Gunnery Sergeant Clarence Roller. Welcome. Welcome,
How
gentlemen.
Are you? Thank you.
So I always like to start with a few interesting facts. First, Clarence was born to interracial parents and was orphaned as a child. And second, he was wounded during his service in the Montford Port Marines, ultimately resulting in a leg amputation. So let's start. Tell me about Clarence. He was born in Lynchburg, Virginia in 1915. How old was he when he enlisted?
He was 28 years old, and he had, at the time, three kids. My father, who was 9, my aunt, who was 7, and I can't remember how old my uncle was. He was the baby. So he left a family of 3 to go fight for the right to fight down in Montford Point and try and make a better way for his family and, you know, paved the way for African-Americans in the Marine Corps, which we know that he was able to do today, but something that up until a couple of months ago, I didn't even know he was part of.
Hmm. What was he doing at the time of enlistment?
I'm not sure. One of the things, no one really talked much about his service, or even his childhood, being that he was orphaned. You know, my grandfather would always say to us that the family he's around with now is the only family that we needed to know about. So his prior life, you know, he didn't really talk about, he never really talked about his service. And neither did my father, uncles, and aunts. It was just, you know, from when I was a kid, I just knew him from, you know, that period on. And we didn't really discuss much about what went on in the past at all. So I really couldn't tell you what his occupation was. But I could tell you when he came out, because he was wounded, he had, you know, pretty much odds and ends types of jobs because, you know, he was disabled. He didn't get his leg amputated until later on in life, but he was wheelchair bound. So you just think about it, 1946, being black and disabled, it wasn't like the world was opened up to give you, you know, opportunities to do a bunch of things. So he just worked, you know, he would, you know, cater for folks, he would bartend, and, you know, just odds and ends jobs around the neighborhood. And that's kind of what he did. And, you know, from the time that I was a kid until the day he died, that's, you know, was pretty much always helping people do stuff, but not necessarily had like a, you know, traditional career, i.e. he worked for a major corporation or anything like that.
But it was a difficult time for African Americans in the 40s. It's said that black soldiers had to fight a two-front battle, victory for my enemies without and victory over our enemies at home. So it was an act of valor, you know, to really join the service at that time. And certainly a man with a family of 3 and a wife, what do you think made him so special? Not everybody made those choices. And going into the Marines is tough.
Yeah. So. And leaving the North to go down to the Jim Crow South, you know, was probably even tougher. But, you know, I think my grandfather wanted to, you know, at that point in time, make a way for his family to kind of, you know, help get us to a place where we could, you know, better ourselves from a family perspective. kind of drove him. And then in doing so, at the same time, understanding that he was, breaking the color barrier. And, if you would meet my grandfather, he's the night. This is why it's kind of so shocking that he was even a Montfort appointment. The nicest person you ever want to meet in your life. The nicest person, kind-hearted, sweet, take his shirt off his back to clothe someone else. And then to think that, he went into the belly of the beast at that point in time, the South, to join the Marines, knowing that they didn't want, black Marines, and to be able to withstand that and pave the way. It just blew my mind, because my grandfather, kind-hearted, gentle person, you wouldn't be the type that you would think would want to do that, but he actually did. Just tells you a testament about who he was inside. Willing to, do what it took to better, us as a people, which is, it just blows me away. Blows me away.
So not all the soldiers actually served, went overseas, went to the Pacific. So I assume that your grandfather did, and that is where he
He's in the
is right
Solomon
now.
Islands.
Solomon
So
Islands.
he actually went overseas, in the spring of 43, he was over in the Solomon Islands.
Okay. Have you ever thought about visiting where he served?
A little.
Oh, Mallory's been thinking about working with a tour company that did out to 6888 tour to maybe put together a tour.
I would do that.
Yeah.
I would do that. It's yeah, I would do that. I went, just going to Montfort Point, when we received the Congressional Gold Medal, and being in that environment just to kind of get a feel for what, that was like and where the area was. Yeah, to take that to the next level and say, okay, he did his basic training here, and oh, after that he was able to go overseas, and this is where he went. I would love to do that. I would love to.
Put that on your list. So,
Yeah.
I know he was a gunnery sergeant. What exactly does a gunnery sergeant do in the Marines? Do either of you know?
No, I don't. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I was first generation non-military. So my grandfather was a Marine, my father Air Force, my uncle Air Force, and my dad was okay, we did the military thing. He wanted to, try the college thing with me. And he pushed me to go the college route. And if I were to do military, he was, pretty much pushing me to do more of an ROTC type of avenue. So I would go in, and come out as like a first lieutenant after I did, my bid after doing college. So yeah, no, I didn't know what a gunnery sergeant was or is. Interestingly enough, how I found out about it, about my grandfather even being in the Montfort Point Marines, was my cousin had a picture of my grandfather, a headshot, and her daughter had recently married a Marine, whose father happened to be a kind of historian. And she sent the headshot over to her son-in-law's father, and he came back and said, hey, he found out that my grandfather was a gunnery sergeant. And my cousin Punchy, that's the one whose mother just passed away yesterday. Both of us kind of giggled. We were like, well, is that good? Because we didn't really know, but apparently that was pretty, a decent rank to have in the military, especially for an African American, and especially for, the 1940s. So something to be proud about.
So I know that he didn't talk about his birth family, and I didn't really reveal that he was in the Montfort Port Marines. So growing up, when you talked to him or when your dad talked to him, did he talk about being in the service at all? Did he share anything? Because sometimes as folks get older, they start to just drop little seeds along the way to so that you can follow the breadcrumbs and make connections and ask some questions. And I'm just curious as to whether or not
Nope. Close
he.
to the vest. All I knew, he was in the Marines, and that's all that was said, And to be honest, my dad, who was in the Air Force, and then he was in the
National
Jesus
Guard.
in reserves after, he really talked about the military either, even though he was still, in the reserves to help me get through college. But it wasn't something that was really spoken about when all of the males got together. They didn't really talk about, military stories, if you will. It was
Yeah.
kind of like that was a part of their lives that was over and done with, and they were in more into the now as opposed to what went on in the past, something that they never really talked about.
Yeah, both of my parents were in the army, and my father, he was in the Korean conflict. He was a physician. He never talked about that time, but my mother talked all the time about
No.
her time. So,
Yeah.
but the
No.
typical pattern I've heard as I've interviewed guests is that the folks didn't talk about it. You know,
Didn't talk about
they
it.
just didn't. It was just you did what you needed to do to help your country. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
And I, you know, I once I found out what my grandfather had accomplished, I was a little bit, upset at him because I had friends who joined the Marine Corps when I was a kid. And boy, oh boy, I would have loved to be able to have bragged a little bit about, you know what? The only reason why you're able to do that is because my grandfather laid the, but I didn't even get a chance to, brag to my friends about, my grandfather paving the way for them to become Marines later on in life, because it was never ever discussed, what he did and what he accomplished.
Yeah. Do you know perchance if he was able to take advantage of the GI Bill to go to school or anything? I mean,
No, I don't.
to buy a house or anything?
He didn't.
Yeah.
No.
Because apparently not everybody managed to have access to it. As is the case with our folks, we often have to fight for things. And so, yeah. And sometimes you get an initial no, and then you don't follow up on it. You just move on. So, do you, as you think back, knowing him, do you have any sense of any things that he might have learned in the service that he kind of passed along? Any values that you think might have been a consequence of his time in the Montfort Marines? Just as you've known him, yeah.
I would say, I would think, determination. I would say doing the right thing. I would say learning how to be a selfless human being. All probably things that he got out of the time that he was at Moffett Point that he was able to then, live as part of his life.
Okay.
I would say that's probably
Did you see some of those traits then in your dad and in your
for
uncle?
sure.
So it passed it on as part of a legacy.
And it came to me, and I've passed it on to my son as well. So, being disciplined, focused, not being deterred, and setting your goals and executing, with precision is part of who I am. And I definitely think I got that from my father, who got it from his father, and that all from his time, in Moffett Point.
Okay. So we'll talk about your family, some more about your family. So Clarence was adopted by a family from Tennessee. Do you know anything about that family?
No, we don't. An interesting thing is, we knew he was from an interracial family. Didn't really know much about the family that adopted him, or his paternal and maternal mother and father. One of the things that we had heard, my father had done some research to try and find out, about my grandfather, and if he had any relatives down in Lynchburg, Virginia, and found who we think was his sister. And we also found that she was going for white and didn't want to be, contacted, especially by some, black relatives. So we kind of like left it alone. But yeah, I didn't know much about my grandfather's family. And like I said, his whole comment to us was, this is the only family you need to know of, is the folks who are around right now. And that's how he lived his life. He loved the folks that we were around, and whatever happened in the past was gone. And that kind of mindset is probably the same mindset as to why he didn't talk about Montford Point, right? That was then, And this is now, and whatever that was, and whatever I did was kind of like history, and let's focus on the here and now. And that was kind of how he lived his life.
But that Clarence Jr., Lawrence Jr., I know you're with your curiosity, you're probably going to want to do some probing into that. Even if your great grandfather didn't talk about it, I suspect that given some of your interest that we're going to talk about in a minute, that might be something that a path down which you might head. Oh.
For sure, especially knowing that all this time, like with Lynchburg, Virginia, I went to school literally an hour away. So there's probably family that I don't know about that's literally an hour away. So,
Have you done any of the DNA tests, ancestry, or oh, no,
my
not
dad did. My father
23, 23andMe, okay.
he did
My
the
father, and that was kind
African
of what led
ancestry.
him down to the path that he got and to find who he thinks was my grandfather's sister. He was doing
African
I think it was
ancestry.
Ancestry.com, was it, Lance?
African ancestry.
Okay,
Okay.
all right.
Yeah.
Well,
And
he did the expensive one.
yeah,
Yeah.
yes. Yeah.
He did the $300 version.
And the thing
Yeah.
I don't know is if he did the maternal or paternal one. I can't find it anywhere. I've been looking, but I thought he did both, but I'm not sure because I know there's two different tests for the African ancestry. You could do the maternal or paternal. I'm not sure which one he did.
Well, I got the results, so I can look somewhere.
Right. Well, because that would be interesting. And you never know. When we did it, we kept finding that we're supposed to have second and third cousins where we grew up. And it's like we didn't have any second or third cousins. Well, that's when you keep going down and you've actually found out that you do have other relatives, and so it's kind of like, wow. Because there's sometimes when you take these things and say, well, they're not exactly accurate, but it's like, so we still have cousins, have second and third cousins to try to track down in Georgia. And so Clarence had three children, your dad, Clarence Jr., right?
Well, his name was Clarence, but their middle names were different. Don't ask me why. My grandfather was Clarence Augustus, and my father was Clarence
Clarence
Edward.
Edward. Okay. So they had Clarence, Alvin, and Coretta. So
Yeah.
tell me about their educational backgrounds and careers.
Okay, so my father served, as I said, in the Air Force. He wound up being a he was in the communications division or the or deployment, whatever it is, and he was one of the people that climbed the telephone poles and laid the communication lines out. So one would think that when he finally got out of the service, he would be able to, land the job with the telephone company, being someone who climbed the telephone poles and laid the cables out, but he was not able to. He wound up working for IBM. My aunt Coretta wound up, she had a job for AT&T. I'm not sure what it was in AT&T. And my uncle Alvin was a banker for Bank of America.
Okay. So Lance, you are a Syracuse and Pace University alum and have had a career in IT. So tell me about your background.
Oh, wow. Okay. So my dad, being exposed to IBM, exposed me to computers at a very young age. So I started programming computers probably when I was like 12 years old. He bought me a Radio Shack Trash 80 and I was able to make a rocket go to the top. I was hooked on computer science programming from the time I went to high school. I knew that's what I wanted to do. So I wound up going to Syracuse University, getting a BS in computer science. Then I wound up working for MetLife in IT, and I was an IT person for 37 years. And during that time, I was able to go back to Pace University and get a Master's of Science in Information Systems. So I've been in IT my whole career. And I owe it all to my father, pretty much exposing me to computers at a very young age and getting me excited about programming because he used to always tell me, the people who program these things, these computers, those are going to be the ones that are going to be ahead. So he kind of pushed me in that direction, and it just so happened I loved it and just took off with it and came my career.
Well, you mentioned Radio Shack. I still have my first Tandy computer in the in storage in the basement. Just seems like it should go in some museum one day,
If you cut that thing on, it may shut the power off your whole house.
No. I Yeah.
That's funny.
So Lance Jr., so you're a University of Virginia and Indiana University alum, and now you're a fellow at the University of Toronto and doing some interesting work on healthcare and data analytics. Tell us more.
So, specifically about the fellowship.
Oh, about your background, what you're doing, you know. So now
Okay.
you did undergraduate at UVA
Yes.
and grad school at Indiana.
Yes.
But I hear you ran track at both schools, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
So I had an extra, I redshirted part of my junior year. So that gave me a fifth year of eligibility. So once I graduated from the University of Virginia, I took that fifth year of eligibility to go to grad school in Indiana.
Okay. So what did you run on the track team?
800. So I was a mid-distance person, 800, 4x4. 800 was my specialty though.
He's humble. He was pretty all American in the 800s. He's not saying he's talking about it like I just ran. No, he's all American multiple times in the 800. So he's pretty
Yeah,
good back in the he's running
what's
days.
NCAA All-American, multiple ACC champion. I competed at the Olympic trials as
Okay.
a senior in college. So yeah, I mean it was decent. It was a decent career.
So which Olympic trials?
2012, so that was London.
London. Okay. All right.
So I was one of the youngest competitors in that field. But it was a great time. It was awesome.
Very good, very good. So now talk about what you're doing now. You're in Nashville, but you're doing a fellowship by the University of Toronto. Want to
Yes.
talk about
So,
that and what kind of what you're doing in that fellowship?
okay. So I am doing a fellowship with the University of Toronto's Dalhousie School of Public Health, and it's a fellowship in journalism and health impact. So even though I'm in, it's a hybrid fellowship. So actually, I'm currently in Toronto right now, even though I'm based in Nashville. But what we do is using journalism to show health stories, and it doesn't have to just be health stories. It could be things you're interested in. So, for instance, right now I am working on a story with a French American media outlet called News Decoder to actually get the story out about Moffat Point. So, trying to show people that we're trying to find the 17,000 remaining Marines that haven't received their Congressional Gold Medal and why it's important because it is a race against time. We still have Marines that are alive, but they're a lot of them are in their 90s, so we want to get them as soon as possible, and including descendants too, because if we can't get them, we want to get the descendants as well. And the rate we're going, we got to get the descendants. So
That's
it's really,
true. That's true. The baby boomers are dropping off like flies every day. So,
yeah. And
yeah.
then we don't know where the lines of kin end with certain people, because you want to make sure you don't know if like certain Marines didn't have children, so it's a race to get to whoever the next line of kin is as well. So it's important that we get that story out there to let people know that hey, you might be the descendant of a Moffett Point Marine. Because to figure out that like I'm just finding out about this a year ago just shows you how like time is of the essence.
And how do you think how many families were like your grandfather? They just didn't talk about it. So these
Exactly.
descendants, the descendants may not know.
Most from what I've been hearing since our involvement is that most Moffett Pointers did not talk about it. That's the common thing that I've heard is that it's not uncommon to hear someone say that whoever the Moffett Pointer is didn't ever speak a word about it.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that once the story comes out, people will read it and then start looking at their history. Like, hey, maybe we have somebody in here. Let's go check our military, or let's go ask grandpa or great grandpa. Like, were you? When were you a Marine? So hopefully that sparks up conversations and people start really looking into the history.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough thing to try to do because you're working with a French outlet, media outlet, but as we know, a lot of people are not don't read much. And you're gonna do something on TikTok also or Facebook to try to. Yeah, well, the baby boomers are not TikTokers. You plan to use what
Also,
media? Oh.
so the story will get tweeted out even with the fellowship. It'll get tweeted out. LinkedIn will spread it. I think they have Facebook accounts, so it'll work its way around. And then I'll send it to people I know as well, just to get the story out there. And then I'm hoping this is the first of many. So this is not just going to be one and done. This is going to be hopefully many individual stories as well. Because as I've been interviewing people and learning more, there have been some really unique stories from Montfort Point Marines and also descendants that should get out there. So I'm hoping this is just the first of many.
Just the other day, this week, in talking with Mallory, we ran across a mother-son combination. The mother enlisted in the 6888 at age 48. So she and her son were in the army at the same time in Europe.
Wow.
So you get this kind of like, so
Wow.
wow, yes.
And that's an interesting story. And
Yes.
so that's
Yeah.
something that people may want to read about. And then that also gets the word out there. It's a mother son sharing a military experience with one another, but then it's also getting the word out about did you say it was the 6888 she was a part of?
6888, yes, and her
So
son,
six
I think, was in the army.
okay. So you get the Black military experience in the army as well as the 6888 experience too. So you're learning about both while
And
also.
we have another roughly probably 800 families we want to try to find. So
Wow.
I'd be interested in talking offline about that, because again, this is the
For
time
sure.
is of the
It's a
essence.
race. It's a
For sure.
race that
Let me
gets done.
know. I'm here to help in any way I can.
In what ways, let's talk about legacy and influence. In what ways do you think Clarence's experiences in the Montfort Point helped shape decisions that you made or your career choices?
Oh, for me specifically,
Both.
I think kind of like with my dad with IT, I think I slowly circled around to that as well, just like on my own with like the data analytics and coding. I don't do exactly what my dad does, but I use a little different program language to like analyze data and stuff like that. So eventually, I guess it naturally came to me as well. Like it took a little longer, but I guess going into IT, I think just when it comes to like that spirit of like never giving up.
That determination that your
Yes,
dad was talking
so
about.
and I
Yeah.
think it lit.
Relentless is the word I would say.
Yes, and I think an extra fire has been lit under me since I found out that he's been a Montfort Point Marine. Because it's one thing where it's like when things get tough. I think about my great grandfather didn't overcome orphanism. He didn't overcome disablism, racism, just for me to give up one like the first failure or the first like loss and just like suck it up. You got it. You can do this. Like keep pushing. So yeah, it definitely made me perseverance. Definitely, it's been instilled and also like believing in oneself. Well, not to say that you didn't before, but it just reiterates it. So I think that's one thing that he instilled in me.
Okay. So how old was Clarence when he passed?
My grandfather was 70 years old when he passed.
A young man.
Yeah, it what happened was, he had that injury where, we were told he had, I guess we were told he had a bullet in his leg, but in reality it was shrapnel. We don't know specifically. Bullet or what have you, because we didn't really see the medical records. But he carried that leg around for from 1946 until I think it was 79 when he finally had it amputated. But then eventually gangrene had gotten
Yeah.
in, and then the cancer is what eventually killed him.
Is
So
he interred at a family cemetery or a veteran cemetery?
Veterans Cemetery.
Okay, in New York.
Yeah, up in New York.
Okay.
Calverton.
So he, Grandpa, and Uncle Alvin are all buried together, right?
Yeah, they're all there.
So remember I just mentioned that there was a 6888 who enlisted at age 48. You know where she's buried? Calverton.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Oh, it's amazing.
Greece keeps coming.
Yep. It's a significant honor for Clarence to receive a Congressional Gold Medal. What was your reaction when you found out?
Shock. First and foremost, as I said, having been around him as a kid, not hearing him ever utter the word, Marine Corps, other than just seeing it in a picture, and then learning about what they endured, when they endured it, and them being the first to then open the doors for future Marines, I was as proud as one could, as a grandson could be, to know that, yeah, that's my grandfather. And I'll just, take it one step further. When I found out that, he was a Moffett Pointer, it stemmed from having these two pictures that I had found on my father's computer. And they were pictures of my grandfather at Moffett Point. And one was of his unit. Took that picture, made it my work background. And when my cousin sent that headshot that I mentioned to you before to her son-in-law's father, and they found out that my grandfather was the gunnery sergeant, I sent those same pictures to, her father-in-law, and that's when we found out that, he was in the Moffett Point. And then that picture being part of the Good Morning America special,
Right.
talk about being, I mean, I was a peacock. I was walking around like as proud as can be, because that's my grandfather. And it took it from, when you watch the Moffett Point Marine Good Morning America special, and you see people and you can understand, okay, what was going on. But when you could say, that's my grandfather that's in this, documentary, it really hit home. And I couldn't be more proud. I couldn't be more proud. So I was a peacock down there getting that, when we got that award, because I had a family member who did something that was really, really significant that paved the way for African Americans today. And that's an honor that I cherish for the rest of my life.
Lance Jr.
When I first found out, I thought it was one of the coolest things like ever. Just the fact that I know we were talking before about accolades, you like mentioning like I was an NCAA All-American. Yeah, that's cool. Everybody's won every year, but like he received the highest civilian award in the United States of America, and he was a pioneer for something historical. It gets no better than that.
It gets
Like
no better than that. Yeah,
it's
I'm with you.
like that's it gets no better than that. So when I first heard that was the one of the coolest things I've heard. And I was also so proud to just be a part of that, and hopefully keep on the legacy of what he did. So
So we know that Coretta was still alive when you found out. Was your dad still was
no,
a
my
dad
it
and
was
uncle?
passed. Everybody had my dad passed in 2012,
Okay.
and Obama posthumously provided the
Right.
congressional medal. I think it was 2011. So my father didn't know anything about it. And then when we found out, last year, he was long gone.
And
And like I said,
your uncle was long gone also.
my uncle
Yeah, I think.
was gone, and my aunt, she was the only remaining child, but she was suffering from Alzheimer's.
Right.
So it kind of broke our heart that she didn't even really get to understand, the magnificent achievement that her dad had, even though, we try, we still brought the medal home, let her, touch, feel, and kind of, explain. But, it kind of broke our hearts knowing that she didn't really comprehend the magnitude of what was in front of her, because, she was suffering from that dreaded disease. But, we know that she understood, even though, she couldn't say it to us.
Right. So when you think about when you think about your grandfather and great grandfather, what does his life and legacy mean to you and your family?
That's for me, Lance.
Both of you gentlemen, each of you gentlemen.
To me, his legacy is all about determination, perseverance, and selflessness. And I'll just give one more story, if I may, on the selflessness of my grandfather, just to tell you a little bit more about him, and hopefully I'm emulating that in my life. My grandfather never wanted to wear a prosthetic when he got his leg removed. He was happy being in a wheelchair, wheeling himself around, crutches, the whole nine yards. My cousin Renee, whose mother just passed, was raised in a single family household by my aunt, and it was my grandfather who was like the father figure to my cousin. When my cousin was about to be married, she asked my grandfather if he would walk her down the aisle, and knowing that, he hated that prosthetic, and my grandfather said yes. And he spent pretty much a whole year torturing himself to learn how to walk in that prosthetic so he could walk my cousin down the aisle. And he did. And when I was a kid and when my cousin got married, I it didn't really dawn on me the magnitude of what he was doing, because everybody was just so, people were crying and all. And I'm like, why are they crying? Grandpa's just walking her down. I didn't get it because I was a kid. But, now, reflecting on it, that he sacrificed himself for the better part of the year in therapy to learn how to walk so he could walk my cousin down the aisle.
That's
And the
incre that's
joke,
that's incredible. Yeah.
yeah, the joke is we never saw that leg again. We don't know if he threw it off a roof, if he found a nearby dumpster and threw it, chucked it in the dumpster.
You
That
sure
was a one man wonder.
he didn't give it to as a wedding present?
We laughed. We said, we never saw that leg again. It did its job, and when that was over, that thing was gone. So even when he passed, we went in the house and try and find in his apartment that leg. There was no sign of the leg. So that was kind of a joke between my cousin and I. That we laughed about when we were, trying, working on getting me a wardrobe for him was, whatever happened to that leg, But yeah, my grandfather, selfless. So I take that. And I have one more I have to say, because this one is for me personally. When I was in college, my grandfather wanted his grandson to have a car, and he's in college. And my dad was, he not getting a car. So he used to ride my father. Lance is going to college. I was about 4 hours away outside of New York City. And my grandfather was, my grandson should have a car. And my father was, he ain't getting a car. So my senior year, my grandfather basically comes to my house, tells my father he's not driving anymore. He stopped driving. So this is what he became the dad. And he said, and this is what you're going to do. I'm giving you my car and you're giving Lance your car. And he's taking it up to college in the senior year. And lo and behold, my senior year, I was driving up to college, and my grandfather, selfless as always, he was like, hey, I'm going to be fine. I'm going to get around. But I want to make sure my grandson, he's going to be big man on campus at least 1 year. And he's gonna drive around, and I'm gonna make sure his dad gives him a car, because now he has no excuse. I gave him mine, you give him his, and he takes it up to college. And yeah, my senior year, I was driving the car up in college. And it's to my grandfather, being that selfless individual and wanting to do what's best for his family, and sacrificing himself. And family has been one of the big parts of my life. My entire life I give to my kids and my family, and I kind of get that from him, and it transitioned to my father, and I'm now giving it to my kids, so that hopefully they can continue to family first it for the rest of their lives as well.
And like you said, like generation passed down, because we know Papa did a lot of stuff for me, so that's his grandchild. So it definitely passes down, and then you'll probably do the same thing when the grandkids come for you. So it definitely instilled in us the selflessness.
So let me ask you this question. You mentioned Alvin. Now, Alvin, did Alvin have any children?
Yeah, we had one daughter.
Okay. And you have siblings? Brothers?
Yeah, I have two sisters. I was the on my father's side, the only male until my
Okay.
son. All women, 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 women. So
And
I,
all
you
I have
know,
are sisters,
name
all
carrier
boys.
to the name carrier. So now my son has the baton continue the legacy of the Roller family. But yeah,
Okay.
mostly girls. And you know, my mother and father on that side had three kids, and my aunt had one, and my uncle had one.
Okay. So I just have a few more questions before we wrap up tonight. So what do you think of Clarence's decision to serve the country, given the level of racism at the time, given that he had a family, young family? What do you think of his decision?
I often it's incredible to sacrifice pretty much your freedom, sacrifice pretty much who you are as a human being to go into the Jim Crow South, because it was bad in the North, but it wasn't the Jim Crow South. And then to leave three young children to fight for that right to fight and to fight for a better life for your family. Whew, wow. It's amazing that he had the courage and fortitude to be able to do that and then do it.
And
It speaks volumes to me, because most people that I know wouldn't even be able to do something like that today.
I would say you got to have the utmost respect for someone who does something like that, because not only like you're dealing with Jim Crow law, like they expect you to fail, they want you to fail, and they're probably going to do everything they
Everything they
can
can to
to
make
get
sure
you
you
to
fail.
fail.
Yeah.
You still got through it, you still succeeded. So, and you know you're going into that knowing that this is going to happen. So the fact that you succeeded, like, utmost respect.
Right.
What gets me too is it's one thing to take that stuff when you're 17 and 18. It's another thing to take it as a grown man at 28. And to be able to do that, and humble yourself, to achieve, a goal that you have. And it's incredible, right? Because I just know I look at the me, right? The Lance of 17 and 18 and the Lance Roller of 28. As you start to mature and become a man, and just think about what they were doing. As my son said, they didn't want, it wasn't like they were opening the door to say, hey, come on and be Marines. They were trying to do everything in their means to not let you become a Marine. And for him to be able to take that at an as an older individual, it's mind-boggling. It's amazing, because
You know,
it's
and your grandmother deserves a lot of credit too, for
for
being
sure.
left behind, so to speak, with three young
Three kids.
children to raise, and so
Just the
yeah,
fact
and
that, just the fact that, like, trying to break you down both physically, mentally, and spiritually, and getting through that. And then, like, grandma also, well, great grandma for me, holding down the fort the whole time. It just shows a lot, like, just utmost respect and
Yeah.
appreciation for everything they do.
And those things do give a different perspective on the our so-called trials and tribulations today, because they were nothing
Huh.
compared to what they went through.
We can't even compare to what they went through back then. This
Right.
is a cakewalk compared
Right.
to life, especially in the, could you imagine the 40s? Oh my God. The Civil Rights Act was 20 years
Yep,
later.
65. Yep. Yep.
So, whew. Wow.
Not too far removed from sharecropping.
Yep. And the South was still that way when I grew up there in the 50s too. So, given where the country is now, do you think he would make the same choice to serve his nation that he is this is this the nation he thought he was serving, do you think? Now, this is all speculation.
That's a good
I
question.
think so. I think so, because it was worse then. Right? So if he had to make the same choice today, based upon how we are today and where we are today, I think it would be easier than what he was facing back then. So I think based upon the person he was and the times that we're in, I would definitely say he would make that same choice today to do what he did without a shadow of a doubt.
I often wonder if they would be really disappointed because I know, as a baby boomer and all the things, the marches we did and the things that we fought for, and you think you've made a lot of progress, and then you see a lot of things that are happening now, it's disappointing. And so
Oh.
I sometimes wonder if they were transported into this moment and were lucid,
I
what would you
think
guys say?
they my opinion, I think they would because they were laying a foundation, right? But then once they passed the baton, the fact that the baton didn't go as far as it one would think it should have gone in, 60 some odd years or, they're actually 70, right?
Nope, almost 80 years.
Almost 80, right?
Yeah.
Almost 80 years,
Yeah.
right? So yeah, one would think that we would be much further along than we are, but I don't think that would deter folks who did what they did back then to not do it today, because their hope would be that we continue to evolve, and one day, we will be in a better position than we are
Yeah.
now. Even though we're not as far as we should be, without a shadow of a doubt, but we are a little bit further along, a little bit.
They
I
took
give us a.
the two steps forward and the one back, but we still got that one where we're ahead, right?
Yeah, I give it a little bit. We're a little bit further.
So when you think about it, what lessons from his story can you share to inspire young African Americans to embrace fear as opportunity so they're willing to get out there and try to be their best selves?
I would say, Lance, I'll hand it over to you, but you have to be fearless, right? You have to not be afraid to take chances. And you have to kind of, dream, follow your dreams, but also be pretty much plan out your path and then go for it. And so, don't take no for an answer, and just think about it. The society response to African Americans in the Marine Corps was essentially no, until we made it not no. So you gotta, don't take no as I gotta work better to get yes. And don't let anything deter you. You set your mind on whatever it is you want to achieve, and you go out and achieve it. And that goes for even in your work career. Nothing's going to be easy. It's not easy. It's actually hard. But hard work, determination, and being relentless in your pursuit of your goals will pay off. I think that's kind of what I would think. They would leave as a legacy to the next generation of African Americans.
And one thing I want to say is for like the young generation, and this also may be the researcher in me, but ask questions about your history. Just constantly ask questions, because through this process, I realized, like, after learning about great grandpa, and then of course Aunt Coretta passing, and just learning different things as I interviewed people, it's important that we make sure each generation passes our history down and we know about the accomplishments that the people before us, because I want to make sure like my kids know exactly what my dad has done, where he worked, his accomplishments, and the same with my grandfather and great grandpa. I want to make sure that gets passed to each generation. Especially because, sometimes a person may be down and out and maybe think, oh, I don't know, I can't do this, I don't know what to do. But if they look at their history and see that someone in their family has done something great, that might light the fire under them or encourage them to keep going. If he can do it, I can do it as well. So just passing down the history, I think, is super important, and just asking those questions. Because you may have someone just like great grandpa who was a Mount Point Marine, a pioneer. So I think that's super important.
And I think the story is should be encouraging to a lot of young people, just hearing your grandfather and great grandfather's story, because he didn't come from easy times in the beginning, you know.
No, he came from hard time. He's an orphan.
Right. And yet he not only survived, he thrived.
He thrived. Yes.
And so that's a, and I think sometimes when people say, "Oh, it's so hard out here, you all don't understand, you know, you've got a nice house, you've got your education." We got here on somebody else's shoulders.
Yeah.
Only did
That's right.
we that's the only way we got here is on somebody else's shoulders.
You're absolutely right. You're
So
absolutely right. And what's I think I know you hear a lot of stories, but I think what I treasure in the story of my grandfather is that he was just a normal guy. You know,
right.
he wasn't some superhero. He was a person that was an orphan and they just kept at it. You know, and then, you know, they made a better way for his kids who made a better way for their kids, and they broke the cycle. And anybody could do it if he could do it. And, you know, he wasn't, you know, a professional athlete. I know there were some Moffat Pointers and some were singers, dance, whatever. He was just a guy, right?
Right.
And if just a guy from interracial parents, born in 1915, interracial parents, just think about that, right? Can do it, so
Right.
can you.
Yep. You know, I was talking to someone recently. Well, this is way back when. It was saying that when they were growing up, they were so hungry the belly used to shake hands with the backbone. You know, but they used that to go on and finish school early, finish medical school in the early in the early 20s. It was just the inspiration, you know.
Yeah.
So the fact that it came from that didn't mean that where you start has nothing to do with where you end up,
Absolutely.
unless you allow it to do so.
100%,
So
100%.
And just the principles that he's instilled in every generation, from grandpa to my dad, now to me, and then hopefully I instill that in the next generation. Just making me a better person in general, and I just hope to keep that tradition up for the next generation. So just very important what he did.
well, gentlemen, I want to thank you for joining us tonight and sharing your family story. I'm really very grateful.
Oh,
Thank you for
Dog
having us.
JC, I just want to say to you, thank you for having us and allowing us the opportunity to tell the story of my grandfather and Lance's great grandfather. Really, really appreciate it. And thank you so much.
To my audience, thank you for listening to Nexus 818 Podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you have questions or topics you'd like to discuss, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nextus818podcast@gmail.com. That's nextus818podcast@gmail.com. I always like to end each show with a favorite reflection. Tonight, I'll share a quote from American novelist and social critic Toni Morrison. If you are free, you need to free somebody. If you have some power, then your job is to empower someone else. See you for our next show on Wednesday, March the 6th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch the show on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Google Podcasts, New York City Podcast Network, and Spotify for podcasters.